Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing,
sir? Don, I'm doing well. You know, basketball has now started. The Timberwolves have opened up their season playing Memphis, if you will. It's halftime. At one time they had a 17-point lead and they blew it, but they're still up by 8. We got hockey going on, college and professional, if you will. The Vikings, of course, the Vikings lost. So they're 5-1, but everybody still says that they do have probably this one of the two top three defenses in the NFL, National Football League. But everybody's all pumped up and et cetera. And we got, hey, man, we're going to take a look tonight quickly. Maybe we'll get a couple calls. The big sheriff, high sheriff here in Hennepin County, where Minneapolis is the county seat, if you will, has sent this is better than Vietnam, man. He's deployed deputies up in North Dakota to take care of that Indian problem up there. You know, we got an Indian problem up there. Those Indians not letting white folks make money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the sheriff here in Anoka County and Washington County, which are, for those that don't know our region, are three counties kind of adjacent to each other. But, you know, Don, you know, now you're a scholar and et cetera. Can you, I mean, you are you able to do that? I mean, can the high sheriff in this state send his deputies all over, you know, the Midwest and et cetera?
Well, according, you know, to some things I've heard, especially out of the Star Tribune here, it's saying that several hundred protesters rally at Minneapolis City Hall Tuesday to demand a Hennepin County sheriff withdraw deputies and equipment from North. Equipment, Mr. Edwards, equipment.
Yeah, he sent armored cars and et cetera. They saw big trucks leaving, going north, going basically up Highway 94 towards Fergus Falls, and then you would shoot across. Yeah, but go ahead, Mr. Allen. I'll cut you off because what are they saying? I mean, everybody's comfortable with this, right?
And this is from the Star Sickle. It says, W from Hennepin, Anoka, Washington County Sheriff's Office was deployed to Morton County, North Dakota on Sunday, this Sunday. The deputies are among officers nationwide who responded to the state's request for assistance. So they're calling them Indian folks up there is going crazy. We need some help with these folks, these brown skinned people.
Yeah. Okay.
To the emergency management system assistance compact.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where the request was made. And the protesters, of course, are American Indian. They're standing up on the water, drinking water state's standing Sioux Indian Reservation. And the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office respects constitutional rights. This is the statement. Peaceful.
Yeah, I saw that statement.
Protest.
Yeah.
So, the speaker of the City Hall rally included Senator Patricia Torres Ray, Minneapolis DFL, Peggy Fleming, DFL St. Louis Park, and Minneapolis City Council member Yolanda Cano.
I'm just wondering, we got that kind of manpower to spare here. Now, you, of course, live in another county, but do we have the manpower here to – what happens if the coloreds get out of control? What the heck are we going to do?
They had to mount them up. They had to mount up.
I mean, man, I don't know. What's the name again of the town that they're being deployed? This is like Afghanistan, man, and et cetera, man. You know, do we declare a state of war or what?
Yeah, exactly. That's crazy. It doesn't make any sense, but – you know, they're up there and, you know, as a part of the assistance to help, you know, the small little town of Morton, North Dakota, handle the Native American protesting. But, you know, we might, you know, end up in the next 30 to 45 days with another wounded knee. You never know. But
for our international audience, this is called the Standing Rock Reservation, correct? That's where the sheriff is deploying his special forces, right? Because they have been using private security guards, some of the boys that, you know, work for those contractors over in Afghanistan and Iraq who stole all that equipment and brought so much dope back into the United States. Blackwater? Remember Blackwater? Boy, they killed a lot of Iraqis over there, just gunned them down. But anyways, they have been some of the special private contractors, but it looks like they can't hold their own because I understand that thousands of Native Americans have poured into that area, Standing Rock, which is actually straddles the borders of both North Dakota and South Dakota. Let me just ask this question, Mr. Allen, with these special law enforcement units being deployed. Doesn't the state of North Dakota have National Guard? Oops.
They're supposed to. They're supposed to have, you know what? If it's regional, they might be a part of the Red Bulls, which is based here in Fort Snelling.
No. Each and every state in the United States of America has their own independent National Guard.
They should have a National Guard, but also, you know, Camp Ripley's not too far from there and also was up north, but from northern Minnesota, but... Yeah, they should have a National Guard. They should have.
Do have a National Guard. South Dakota has a National Guard. North Dakota, in fact, North Dakota has a lot of money that's been coming in the last 7 or 8 years from that oil. You know, they have the big oil field up there around Williston, North Dakota. Big oil fields and things up there. But I'm just kind of wondering, you know, why North Dakota's governor did not deploy North Dakota National Guard, if you will. I mean, that's their sovereign responsibility to you know, protect the sovereignty of the state of North Dakota. And then also he could get backup from the National Guard in South Dakota, which is also a separate state sovereignty entity, if you will. South Dakota National Guardsmen could be rolled up there. Now, it's about the water, so we really don't care. I mean, if the pipeline cracks under the Missouri River and et cetera, if the Indians get poisoned, we don't. What do we care, right?
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah. You know, we don't care about that. They don't care about Flint, Michigan. I mean, so what? It's Native Americans. What are they going to do? Take the time fixing it.
Yeah,
so
well, I'm kind of saying, and up there around Fort Yates, I've been up in Fort Yates a couple times there, nice little town there on the Missouri Reservoir, et cetera. But I really, it's been a long time, even during the riots, the civil upheaval of the 1960s, I don't remember any state asking anybody else to send National Guardsmen into Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, Newark, if you will, Los Angeles, up the Twin Cities, Madison, St. Paul. I mean, we had martial law here, man, and our local boys took care of that. We just brought them in from the National Guard armories, primarily in rural Minnesota, you know what I mean? And they brought those Jeeps in and had those 30 caliber, and some had 50 caliber machine guns, you know what I mean? And shut that north side down, you know what I'm saying, partner? And, so I just don't understand. The phone lines are open, Don. Given that, because we're trying, is the sheriff doing the right thing?
That's what we're wondering. We're wondering. Yeah. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. Yeah, there's a lot of complaints,
right,
Mr. Edwards, especially on social media. People's really complaining about, you know, Sheriff Rick Stannis, the high sheriff, sending, you know, his guys up there, but you know, it's a done deal, and they're up.
Yeah, well,
they're
sending up their armor and et cetera. Kind of, you know, like I said, kind of reminded me like we'd be going into a poor sovereign country. You know what I mean? With our big powerful.
Yeah.
You think they'll ultimately like send some attack helicopters and things up there?
Yeah, their numbers. They're not up there already. You know,
well, there are some attack helicopters. The reason I raised that question for our listening audience around the world, if you will. That now you have to understand, the sheriff in this county, this is an altogether separate state. We're in the state of Minnesota, which is a sovereign state, if you will, and the county is a sovereign county. And of course, the sheriff's department is a department attached to the county. The sheriff is an elected official. He's an elected official, like most sheriffs are here in the state of Minnesota and in this part of the country, the so-called upper Midwest and et cetera. But I'm just not understanding, if they're that overwhelmed by the red man, if you will, then why was the National Guard not called out, and why didn't they ask President Obama for federal assistance? You know, we're talking in terms of national security, right? I mean, you know, building a pipeline so that big oil and big corporate America can continue to get rich. And so I'm just not understanding. I mean, you know, they should have asked the president to not only federalize the North Dakota National Guard, but to, hell, let's send in, like we almost did here in 1966, let's send in federal troops, okay? Protect that oil well and those, that pipeline, right?
Correct. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I'm looking here, Ms. Harris, because, you know what, I've never seen anything of a community benefit agreement for the Native Americans up there, and I am not seeing nothing online. And I'm looking here, and I'm just thumbing through. They have a website here called Energy Transfer, and it would have the information that we need, and it doesn't have it. So I don't see anything that has anything that says anything about a community benefit agreement on behalf of the Native Americans up there. It seems like they're just kind of bogarting into their land and basically
doing.
Well,
here's the thing that I would think that the Attorney General of the United States, Ms. Lynch, and President Obama should be concerned with, because a lot of this action is taking place in and around the Standing Rock Indian Reservation, which is federal land. And I 2 months ago, I mean, I was very much aware of these private militia, if you will, coming in. And, in fact, I remember witnessing on NBC and CBS and CNN an attack by dogs, if you will. These guys, paramilitary, if you will. I kind of thought I was, you know, back like in El Salvador, you know, or somewhere like that. And they were attacking Native Americans and babies and women and et cetera. And so I thought that they had it pretty well under control with these private security guards, a private militia, if you will. But apparently the Native Americans are wearing them down. But again, I you know, because of national security, and most importantly, as, you know, Hillary Clinton is very much attuned to, big corporate, Donald Trump, big corporate and et cetera. So I just don't understand why they just don't go on to federalize about 5,000 airborne troops and just send them up there. Because some of this action is taking place on federal land. And there's been legal precedent. You know, the boss always tells us about the importance of legal precedent. And there's legal precedent with regards to what you're doing on federal reserves. You know, that's one of the actions that happened out there in Oregon, in southern Oregon, where they had some conflict and shooting and homicide, and, you know, and fatalities and et cetera. But, yeah, phone lines, like I say, are open. I'm interested to see what the thinking is of some of our more progressive leadership and et cetera, if they know and understand anything about it. But the sheriff here in Hennepin County, sheriff in Washington County, and the sheriff in Anoka County have sent and deployed. We need to use military terminology here so that our international audience gets a flavor, Mr. Allen. We're talking about the deployment of heavily armed paramilitary forces. Yeah. You know, you said it right at the top of the program. I hope we don't have another wounded knee.
Yeah, and it says here, it says here on this website under Investment Relations Energy Transfer from North Dakota, our goal is to reach an agreement with property owners through negotiations to sign a sign an easement voluntary at a fair price. Historically, we, the land agent, assigned to work with the landowner will be primary contact through the project. However, if your land agent is unavailable to address your questions or concerns, please call the Dakota Access Project toll-free number at 844-708-2639. So there's a bunch of this Q&A kind of website here for those that are interested, that are wondering what's going on with that particular pipeline from the background or, you know, from the corporate point of view, not necessarily from the Native American point of view. And we have Minnesota sheriff deputies in North Dakota as we speak with equipment.
You know, armored equipment, state-of-the-art, just like, well, just like Ferguson, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we bring that stuff in. I don't know that we'd bring something like that if it was a white protest. I mean, if some white folks were... Oh, I'll tell you, give you an example. The guy out there in Nevada who's hired paramilitary people, he's been on some federal land out there for 20 years, hasn't paid rent or anything else, and he told him to kiss his behind, you know, the Obama administration and them haven't said anything. In fact, don't you remember last summer we were talking one evening on our program here about the standoff that they can. Now, can you imagine some people having a standoff with heavily armed federal agents? But allegedly there was this standoff, if you will, out there in Nevada. And then those guys later were involved in the firefight up in Oregon, where there were some casualties and et cetera. You know what I'm saying? So we need to talk about these things because our friend Donald Trump is pulled within 3 to 4 points of Hillary Clinton. Oops.
Ooh, he's pulling in close, Mr. Edwards. I've been kind of watching, you know, what's going on, and it's going to be pretty interesting. Win, lose, or draw, it's going to be very, very interesting. You know, moving forward here, Mr. Edwards, today I was kind of shocked when I was reading Grit Magazine, and one of the headlines was Jay-Z bids to buy Prince's unreleased music. And it says,
mentioned that in the production meeting. Go ahead, huh?
Yeah, his sister Tyka and her husband, Maurice Phillips, were in the Big Apple to discuss an offer by Jay-Z of $40 million for Prince's unreleased music. And, you know, I posted a piece on Facebook saying that, you know, this is no. Are there any black people in Minnesota that, you know, can do this, can keep his legacy here? Why would you, where's Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis? I mean, where are those type people? Morris Day, some of the people that he was affiliated with. And then I went on to say, you know, well, where are the black Minnesotans, the wealthy, prosperous black Minnesotans that should get together and put their heads together? But it proves our point, Mr. Edwards, that we've been saying many years, you on your many outlets and me on mine, that that there's an issue with generational wealth in the black community, prosperity in the black community, and the narratives don't match up to what we're seeing. And and there is a problem there. The Jewish community here in Minnesota, you know, I ate regularly with my uncle at the Lincoln Dell. And I know that thing was passed down. That thing was passed down to, you know, family member to family member, stay open for a very long time. And
Lincoln Dale's very popular with the Jewish community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that system here where, you know, our things are passed down or passed over or shared. And this is just, you know, it's really terrible to look.
But, Don, I just don't understand your narrative. I mean, because just in the last number of hours, word has filtered out. I received a call. I guess a couple people were kind of critical that you had indicated that. I don't know why it would be critical, because we were told way back in May that $35 million, and then it increased to $70 million of assets, money, and et cetera, was on its way into the African-American community. We reported last week on these programs that the governor on June 1, 2016, signed the final legislation and the bill dispensing and distributing and all of that, the monies and et cetera. And I know there's some happy unhappiness that we keep mentioning Mike Wynn, who was given the assignment as the overseer or fiduciary agent. I prefer to say overseer make sure that the colored community got this $35 million, $70 million, whatever the figure is, that, as you pointed out last week. And, of course, by the way, our programs are on demand, so you can always test the authenticity of what we are saying by calling the program back up if you remember the date and et cetera and the subject matter. So I'm a little confused because I was just assuming that a whole lot of positive things were going to be happening. In my column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder newspaper, the newspaper of the late Cecil Newman, I pointed out that I just cannot understand, with all of this prosperity, why we continue to have violence. You know, people ODing on heroin and things like that, and all kinds of criminal activities. And we got a gunman right now who's moving up and down Golden Valley Road here over the last number of weeks, got people terrified, sticking people right out of the street. In fact, he stuck up two people and declothed them. He took the clothes from them also. They were out there butt naked on Golden Valley Road right off Penn. We've got gunmen robbing and sticking up, home invasions, such. I just don't understand it, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, that's
just
crazy.
Don't understand.
That's crazy. I mean, and I don't understand it either. I mean, you're looking around here, and you know, you got these surrogates out in the community saying one thing, and these surrogates, I just want to let everybody know, these surrogates are not to be taken seriously. Matter of fact, everything you see from them on social media, if they say it in the street or in the radio or in the air in the car driving by, question it.
Be
a critical thinker. Question.
That's right. Now, Mr. Allen, listen, we're moving and jumping, and then hopefully, you know, phone lines are open. The Jamar Clark thing, you know, we carried that and talked about it a whole lot, had a lot of different folks on, and I wrote eight columns in the local colored paper, and on this entire matter, but it's now closed, okay?
Yep.
The investigation by the MPD, that's the Minneapolis Police Department, determined that there was no legal prima facie to take any action against the officers for even the minimal possibility of a violation of procedure, rules, regulations, training protocol, and et cetera. And so that matter is over, and I think we just need to clear the air with our listening audience to the extent that under the law here in the state of Minnesota is that when there is a determination of no probable cause, the case is closed and nothing can be discussed after that.
Yeah.
No information can be forthcoming and et cetera. And so that's what's happened. I'm saddened by that because, God, I can remember our program the week following the tragic death of Jamar Clark. NAACP president, Ms. Nikiva Pounds, the St. Paul president. This is before the Castile killing on the, 8th of July. We're saying that they had so many videos and witnesses and et cetera, and I thought it would be just a slam dunk, right, for a prosecution and et cetera. And then lo and behold, we found out that none of this evidence that our leadership was saying to the community existed. And we asked the question in the summer of 2016 if we should expect our community to take some responsibility for this, and I guess that was a little bit more than, you know, what you could ask for. But the Jamar Clark, that case is closed. It's all over, and there'll be no more discussion, and you will not be able to receive any information with regards to what evidence was used to make the final determination. Now, this is a high profile, you know, involving both the federal authorities, Department of Justice, FBI, U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, and then the big, powerful county attorney, if you will, Mike Freeman, and his very dramatic press conference where he highlighted, while basically defaming the deceased, Mr. Clark. But then, you know, as Justice Taney said back in 59, you know, there are no rights that the Negro has that the white man is honor-bound, duty-bound, legally bound, morally bound to respect. So I just think we need to just clear the air that the Jamar Clark situation has ended. There was no evidence that supported any of the things that you and I heard and talked about on these programs for weeks. What was it, 10, 12, 13, mm-hmm. 14 weeks? Wasn't it
13 weeks, yeah, long time. We went on and on. Had people on the radio with us that thought they saw what they didn't see that they saw.
That's right. That's what it was. I had apparently the only real witness. There were two specific. One was a security guard. The other one was a man by the name of Mr. Copeland, Jerome Copeland, who stood tall, gave statements, and et cetera. Next thing he knew, the BCA specifically was trying to put him in jail for 19 months, talking in terms that this Negro shouldn't have been meddling, if you will. And so at some point, we thought on these programs that all this evidence, these videos, and I said, I can well remember some of the discussions that people were talking about on the early and late morning of the 15th of November in front of the Elks Ref for our national, international audience. That is a fraternal organization that has a club right there on the 1600 block, Mr. Allen, Plymouth Avenue North.
Yes.
You remember that?
Plymouth Avenue, yep.
And I had individuals who were even, you know, involved with law enforcement and et cetera in their estimation, and they were saying that they were right there when Jamar Clark was shot while in handcuffs. And they, within seconds after he'd been shot, they had turned, and, of course, video showed up showing them four blocks down the street at the time that the shot was fired. So
exactly.
Mike Freeman just took advantage of those inconsistencies and just ran with it, man. Just absolutely ran with it. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Mr. Edwards, we looked at it from a plethora, a cornucopia of different angles, as investigative news reporters do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that still bothers me that we have yet to really discover, I mean, we know it's kind of rhetorical to us, but we're still kind of sitting back in the cut till it comes out fully, is what happened to all the money for the Jamar Clark vigils, the fundraisers, especially the headstone? We know that Reverend Jerry Maxey held something at his church and was responsible for actually getting a headstone on Jamar Clark's grave. Okay,
yes, and I went to the cemetery, and specifically a couple weeks later, and we mentioned it again on these programs, I actually talked to the employees, the personnel, in fact, a very lovely, very professional African-American woman there at the Crystal Lakes Cemetery, and she had assured me, this would have been in late February, that they were waiting for the ground to thaw, and the headstone had been bought, that Reverend McAfee had provided, along with other ministers, the necessary monies, and that a little small, beautiful headstone, inexpensive, had been bought and would be placed in the ground. My grandfather is also interned at that cemetery, and on Memorial Day, as example, when I went out to place flowers and et cetera and pay my respects, I had checked, and there was a small headstone for Mr. Clark, but it didn't come from that over $100,000+ that was, you know, given by citizens who, you know, felt they were doing the right thing. It's just an excellent point. Maybe we'll get a caller who will help us understand how that money is accounted for.
And Mr. Edwards, you know, since we're on for an hour and a half, I want to just play 2 minutes of this, and this is Jamar Clark's sister from Chicago.
Yes, sir.
I just want a couple minutes of this real quick.
Yes, sir. Let's go right ahead.
On my way home, like, really?
Okay.
Everybody is stuck with my brother like that. So they don't want to even let, they don't want to let me speak. That's why I didn't speak, like, on the real shit.
Uh-huh.
That shit crazy. Because it was said that his mom's son, which is, I mean, that's my stepbrother. We grew up together.
Uh-huh.
It was saying he collected like $27,000. Now he's denying it. But I know it's like almost $11,000 in the account that he still has open, which we just confronted him about. But Like, why are you collecting $11,000? And then he want to put it off on Kenya McKnight, which is my sister and brother's first cousin on their mom's
Hold on, hold on. I know her from Minneapolis,
yeah,
right?
But Yanni, okay, that's Yanni. But
she's a Muslim.
You know,
she's a Muslim, right?
Yeah, before the funeral, she got a BMW truck. We seen that. And then 7 days after we came home, she got it like a 2016, but she was in charge of some of the shit too. Like, where did you get this money from all of a sudden? Like,
well,
for real.
I think, Mr. Edwards, that's all we need to play because we still have her, their family. The family has questions about this
yes,
money. You heard
yes,
about $11,000, yes. $27,000. We know that money was given to certain members of Black Lives Matter, Minneapolis NAACP, and
oh,
others.
There are surveillance pictures of people receiving envelopes
mm-hmm.
from good white citizens. And in fact, in a couple pictures, there's a picture of an envelope, which a nice chunk of money being given to one of the ministers, and it was not Reverend Jerry McAfee. So, you know, people need to get off that. I mean, the amount that has been identified, and on that program, that tape that you just played, that was back in, I think, early December 2015, there were shown at least three bank accounts with over $100,000 that had been, you know, donated, given, if you will, in the name and the spirit of Jamar Clark. So your question, I think, is a valid one. We asked the question quite a bit back in December, January, February, and then, you know, in March, we were just basically told, particularly as the county attorney indicated, he wasn't going to, convict, indict, or anybody else. Oh, by the way, we got to get that indict correct because it was actually the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, and others who told the county attorney there was no need to impanel a grand jury. He could do it by himself.
Yeah.
Which, of course, he immediately took advantage of and found no probable cause, no bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we just want to be, you know, the narrative here, but it's closed now. I mean, let's just, you know, I hate to use this kind of term. Let's just call a spade, you know what I'm saying, and that it's all over. No information will be forthcoming. The law allows the entire case to be sealed. It's sealed. And so all that rhetoric, and I heard some of it on the electronic call-in program on Friday evening, in which my colleague, Mr. Allen, actually was the first caller.
Yeah.
You know, Don, I listened to 37 minutes of that before I had other things to attend to. You know that no person of color ever called in other than you and I.
Oh, no. Say it ain't so, Mr. Edwards. You
yeah,
mean
I have to say.
Our ears to the ground? Oh,
I have to say. You know, and oftentimes the individual who was handling the calls would be Deputy Chief Mario Arredondo, highest-ranking African-American in the Minneapolis Police Department. One of the things he would basically do is call your name out, make you identify yourself, and et cetera. There were rules of engagement on how it would be done, but I felt compelled to certainly call in and indicate that, well, you know, it's too bad that all of the evidence that responsible leadership organizations, civil rights groups, and et cetera, said that they had, once they were exposed and not telling the truth about that, and they didn't have the evidence, we became setting ducks. We were like little hamsters for the big U.S. attorney and the big county attorney, and now even the MPD. I mean, we were like little hamsters as a community.
Yeah. Couldn't turn nowhere.
Yeah.
But it is. We do have a caller that's called in. And
let's get the caller in because we are expecting some inquiry. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Yeah,
caller,
caller, you're live on the air. Go, yes, sir.
Hi. I wanted to I'd like to ask Mr. Edwards a couple of questions about the Jamar Clark case, if I could.
Okay. Just your first name, sir. We've heard your voice before.
Steve.
Okay,
yeah.
Steve, appreciate it. Well,
yeah.
The Jamar Clark case, yes, go right in.
Yeah.
Here. What's your question?
Well, I guess, are these police officers now back on the job then, or?
Oh, yes, actually, they've been back on the job since November, well, to late November. They were assigned to desk duty. That's what everyone was saying. They've been doing desk duty ever since. They served whatever the union contract called for a couple weeks.
Uh-huh.
And then, let's say, by January – excuse me. I'm sorry, sir. By December 1st, 2015,
uh-huh.
They were back on the job.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. So, and then you're saying that the grand jury testimony – this is all sealed. So the family –
No, there was never a grand jury.
Oh, there wasn't? Okay. But none of – but okay, so what information does the family have access to then exactly?
They don't have access to any information. See, there wasn't a grand jury because the leadership, NAACP, Black Lives Matter, and others told the family that they were going to represent their best interests under color law, basically, you know, protested and said to the big, powerful county attorney that they didn't trust in the grand jury system, but they trusted him. And this county attorney has no history. In fact, we have a case here right now that should have gone to trial a year ago in the death of a young African-American, Terrence Franklin. You probably heard us talk about it. In fact, we talked about it quite a bit in our discussions with you in 2015. And the Terrence Franklin case is supposed to go to trial sometime in November, but our sources are indicating to us that that's not going to happen, if you will. But to your question, sir, because that is a very valid question. No one has asked that question since the announcement that the matter was closed. There is no grand jury testimony.
No grand jury.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was kind of reading some of your columns on your website,
I noticed
one back in January, and then you had some others too that indicated that you had some problems with the integrity of the investigation. I was just wondering.
Is absolutely correct. I think the one you're talking about in January was the 28th of January, and what would have been like my third column on. Matters pertaining to Mr. Clark, and it had to do with a man by the name of Jerome Copeland, who was one of really only two witnesses who really saw what happened that night other than the authorities and the hospital or the medevac individuals. I, in fact, was with him at the time that he gave his sworn statement and testimony to the investigators, BCA and FBI. One-hour interview, if you will, later posted on the on the county attorney's website, but it disappeared after a while when we raised questions on why Mr. This is a funny thing, sir. Mr. Copeland's testimony, in which I thought he gave a very serious and comprehensive narrative of what he saw, and he was standing about 25 feet away. at the time of the death of Mr. Clark. But when the case was first sent over by the BCA and their partner, the FBI, to the county attorney because of comments that I was continuing to make, and then people were trying to say that another person was my so-called source, that person was clearly not. I had no conversation with that person. My source was Mr. Copeland, who the authorities knew that I had accompanied Mr. Copeland when he gave his statement, if you will. Yeah. So what happened is that Mr. Copeland's statement of record was not in the original file sent to the county attorney. County attorney realized that this was a liability and a problem, and he sent the case back to the BCA.
Mm-hmm.
For all the naysayers out there and et cetera, it is all documented in articles in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the St. Paul Dispatch. These are white papers, so, you know, I know those white folks. And so the, what they had to do was send the case back and slide Mr. Copeland's statements into that narrative and that testimony so that they would not be caught tampering with the case. Now, this commentator sent a letter after my column of the 28th of January. I sent a letter to the Department of Justice. It's on my website. It's on my website there on the West Coast. I sent a letter to the Assistant United States Attorney General for the Criminal Division indicating that there had been tampering. And actually, Mr. Copeland and I offered to give testimony before a federal grand jury relevant to the tampering, if you will, with information, evidence, statements, and et cetera. Of course, you know, Ms. Lynch, the Attorney General of the United States, and others did not take me up on that. But that, well, it's too late now because everything has been, case has been closed, you know, deals have been cut, and et cetera. But we did that. We reflected it. In fact, the letter to the Assistant United States Attorney General, a female, by the way, is on, has been posted for, for 10 months on my website. And so, yes, sir, to your question, I did as best I could under the circumstances, and particularly in light of the threats that I see and that I saw being made against the franchise of Mr. Copeland, who is still with us, still here, worked very hard this summer to help try to deal with the problem of violence in the streets of our city and et cetera. And so he is a man still committed, if you will, and I'm proud to know him.
I had some question, another question too about the, was there some issue with the video of that incident? I thought
you
there
know,
was
the video
question
of the death of Mr. Clark?
Yeah, there was something having to do with the, was it the ambulance or?
Yes, the key video that the county attorney and the U.S. attorney and others said was in play was the video inside of the ambulance, and it would be on the on the inside part of the roof that showed Mr. Clark in the moments before his death kind of standing there. A statement was written in the paper yesterday talking in terms that, you know, it was tragic, his death, but, you know, that he was defiant and that he was intoxicated and et cetera. And so for that reason, because he did not comply, see, what cost him his life was when he didn't comply to take his hands out of his pockets. But, you know, he had no idea that the MTEs had called for the police because they didn't like his demeanor and his attitude and et cetera. Now, you have to understand that 61 seconds after the police made contact with Mr. Clark, he was dead.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, 61 seconds. In fact, in a column in a letter to the editor of the major white paper here in Minneapolis, it was interesting, a former reporter for white reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune was kind of giving a kind of slick narrative, if you will, but really coming down on the side of you know, the system and et cetera.
Yeah.
He's the one that made a point to, you know, that Mr. Clark was being somewhat belligerent, didn't comply, and et cetera. Well, really, he didn't have enough time to comply. Now, the camera in the back of the ambulance that you saw or that you're talking about, you didn't see it, I assume, at this point, so though you can, I think, string it, or as they say. From the time that the officer approached him from behind and took him down, like I said, it was 61 seconds. And he was gone. He was dead.
Wow.
Now, where the leadership in our community got itself caught up was when professional agitators, including one who was involved very much in the Terrence Franklin misrepresentation that's going to cause them, if it ever goes to trial, to lose that trial, certainly similar to what's going to happen in the case of Mr. Castile. They're going to lose that one. But what basically happened was when 2 days after the death of Mr. Clark, leaders, actually, of our major organizations started running around talking about that Mr. Clark was handcuffed when he was shot and executed by the police officer. Of course, there was evidence in regards to that that probably didn't happen. And here's how they did that, by saying that there was no DNA from Mr. Clark on the handcuffs. Well, that's correct, because when the officer was trying to secure him, as we have talked about, and Mr. Allen, my associate, was with me each time, is that at the time that the officer Ronnenberg was holding him in a chokehold, and Mr. Clark was, you know, trying to figure out what the heck was going on, the second officer, Swarzy, he had already drawn his weapon, and what we're saying right now, we said in December, right, Mr. Allen? We said in December of 2015, as Swarzy, holding his gun in one hand, attempted to get his handcuffs around to handcuff the defendant, and for whatever reason, they maintained that Officer Renberg, who feared for his life, screamed, "Shoot him, shoot him, shoot him," you know. Swarzy actually dropped his handcuffs in the grass. In fact, it was a group of officers who arrived after the death of Mr. Clark who happened to see the handcuffs laying there. And what happened, people saw them pick the handcuffs up and, you know, just made certain assumptions which were totally incorrect and had a significant unfortunate bearing on the case. But the handcuffs would have never had Mr. Clark's DNA on them, because the officer never got them around in the front of him. And as I said before, he was holding his gun in one hand. He was reaching back for his handcuffs. Everybody was screaming and hollering. And, of course, people were starting to come out of the apartment complex and et cetera. But the weapon discharged, and, of course, Officer Swarzy dropped the handcuffs into the grass. See, they never heard the handcuffs actually fall. They didn't know where the hell the handcuffs were. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was the third squad of officers that arrived that one of them, who happened to be a supervisor, happened to look down and saw the handcuffs.
Hmm. Wow.
But what will happen is that, technically, that testimony in the center will never be known to the family, because it's, the case is closed.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. So, but also, I thought that your representatives indicated that you have some observations about the presidential election, that Mr. Trump has closed within 3 or 4 points of challenger Hillary Clinton. What is your thinking down in your part of the country about this?
Well, down here in Missouri, Trump is very popular. He's leading in the state poll, and I think he's leading probably by about 6-7 points here. Yeah. Although and then in Kansas, of course, which is he's leading there by probably even by a larger amount there in Kansas.
Because Kansas has always been a Republican state, per se. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, it's always been a Republican state, and it's also taken a turn to the right with Governor Brown back there, because he's instituted sort of trickle-down economics there. And
David Stockton.
Yeah.
David Stockton under Ronald Reagan.
Stockman.
Yeah, I know that's part of history that people don't even know and remember anymore. That's right, Brownback is. And, of course, Brownback has never been a champion of the Negro. Am I correct?
No, he's never. No, and they're actually having trouble now funding the school system. Well, the theory was that by cutting taxes, it would generate all this revenue and new business. Well, all it did was increase the budget deficit. And so now they're trying to find ways to fund the schools and other things they need to, you know, fund for the government, because it never increased business in Kansas. So they've got kind of a problem there. Yeah.
I have two questions for you, sir, before you go. Okay. In fact, I've just received Mr. Allen's text message. from one of our listeners and has asked me to put a specific question to it's Steve. Is that right? Yes.
Yes.
Number one, you were key source last week and week before on what is happening, if anything, in Garden City, Kansas, the site of what was going to be a white terrorist attack on Somalis and other Muslims there in Garden City. Has anything changed? I mean, we've seen nothing. We've seen nothing in the media here.
Well, there's actually been nothing in the media here either. The only thing now is kind of the feel-good stories that have come out lately about how residents of Garden City have now, you know, they're trying to help the Somali population, and there was some like small I don't know if they were considered protest or demonstrations, but just a handful of people would say that how much they appreciated the Somalis being there, and that they didn't want their city to be seen as sort of a racist kind of town.
Okay, all right. Garden City, by the way, for our international audience, located in the southwestern corner of the state of Kansas, if you will, the next city that it's close to that, of course, has a long history, and that's Dodge City, legendary in the folklore of Wyatt Earp and people like that. But Garden City, nice little town there. But it's a city. In fact, Steve, I think it was you that last week indicated that the demographics had changed, that it's now considered to be a minority city because of the numbers of Hispanics, because there's only 120 Somalis there, but a large number of Hispanic Latinos who have come up to work the chicken process factories and processing plants, which are owned by Garden City kind of like the Tyson Empire, Tyson Chickens, Tyson Meats, Tyson whatever?
Yeah, it's the it's the largest employer in Garden City, and I think they employ somewhere. It depends on what documents you look at, but somewhere between like 2,200 and almost 3,000 employees there.
Okay, so Tyson Foods is a big player in the politics of Garden City. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
now, I've been asked by a caller who I will at this point not identify for security measures, indicated that they thought that you were an individual who was on a national radio program talking in terms of what you and your personnel observed in the conflict there on the Native American reservation, which straddles both North and South Dakota, the big battle over the oil pipe and such, because the sheriff here in our beloved county, the sheriff in Anoka County, which is just north of us, and the sheriff in Washington County, which is on the other side of Ramsey County, have deployed our military convoys to that part of / North and South Dakota, the Standing Rock Native American. I don't know if you can discuss. Was that you, or was that some of your personnel, or who?
Well, I'll just if they think it's me, it may be some of my personnel. That's possible. Yes. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. All right.
If they want to. Yeah. They want to.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
Right.
They,
go ahead, sir. Because for a person to take the time to text and asked if that question would be asked of Steve as they texted, we want to try to comply.
Yeah, we have people there trying to gather information. I'll put it that way. So we'll have more information, you know, sometime later on. But one of the things, like you were saying, there's some questions I think you guys had discussed earlier, some questions about the legality of deputies going into I don't quite understand how they can do that, but I mean, because like you say, they were going on federal land and Indian reservation and the like. Oh, and one thing too that happened this evening, and I don't know if this was mentioned early on about the no-fly zone over part of that area there.
Oh,
I don't know if that,
Mr. Allen, do we have anything on the big computers? Because I had not. Oh, is that to deal with the possibility of drones?
Yeah, that's part of it is drones, but generally in aviation, there's the FAA since 9/11 can designate certain areas as temporary flight restriction areas,
mm-hmm.
and they've done that now. Actually, today, starting today, in the area, it's around.
My co-host, Mr. Allen. How many hours ago, Mr. Allen?
Six hours ago, the FAA issued a no-fly zone in Cannonball, North Dakota area. And there's a map here. It's a pretty huge area. Because of the protests. Drone pilot FAA.
Well, what do they think? The Native Americans have ground-to-air missiles? Or what? Whoa, Jesus, what's happening here? Because the contingent of armed and well-armed sheriff's deputies from three counties here, they were driving up the Highway 94 towards the and across North Dakota and South Dakota with half tracks and et cetera. Let me ask you, sir, because I don't want to go into other. But you are obviously, because you talked to us back in the days of Ebola about restrictions on air flight.
Yeah.
Why would the Federal Aviation, why would they do this? They don't want to see happen? They don't want the media to be able to maybe fly up with small aircraft or something like that? I mean, why would you deploy this kind of almost state of emergency?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. I suspect that the reason that they don't want the media in there, so they don't want anyone flying in that area. And I think it goes from the surface to about 3,500 feet. This particular
so they're mostly concerned about helicopters, but also about drones.
Yeah, but about drones and helicopters both. So it sounds like a way for them to. Keep the media out. And they've been doing that anyway. I mean, they've been attempting to, as you've noticed, there hasn't been a whole lot of press coverage of this anyway. And so this
right.
is a good way that, so whatever, it sounds like they may be planning something. I'm not sure, but
that they would attempt to maintain that there had been some kind of contact with these very courageous and honorable Native Americans with Muslim terrorist groups who had Jesus Christ. I mean, I know it sounded kind of funny, but I really was serious when I said, I mean, do they think the Native Americans have ground-to-air missiles? Jesus.
Yeah.
Has it become that serious?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what that may be somewhat part of. They may think they have something that they can shoot at, at their helicopters with. But I think in part it's sort of like I remember one time here in the Midwest there was a disturbance in the city and the police shot out all the streetlights, and this is basically the same kind of thing. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a way to keep everything in the dark there about
okay.
what they're doing. So it keeps the
in
media
other words,
out.
Allow targets of opportunity that are under the control of the government, right?
Yeah.
Well, I just hope that the government or the sheriffs and them don't deploy these Firecat. Drones and go in and kill some Native American leadership.
Yeah, I hope not.
Because
yeah.
everybody could play like, oh, we don't know what happened. Wow.
Yeah.
Steve, we've taken a lot of your time, sir. We appreciate it. Anything else that you have or any questions you have of myself or my associate, Mr. Allen?
No, I think that's all.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay.
And hopefully anything happens in Garden City, please feel free to contact my intermediaries, and we'll try to make sure we get you on.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Ms. Harris, we have another caller. Caller.
Go right ahead, caller. Go right ahead. I'm sorry that we had to get that information. Caller, what can we do for you?
Gentlemen, am I joining you in the conversation now?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We just talked with a source in Missouri. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, that was very, very, very interesting. Yes, this is Mr. M calling from a palatial estate somewhere in the Twin Cities area.
Yes, sir.
Always listening to you guys, you know, but, you know, it's just real strange how, you know, when we get news in this area, it's almost, you know, it's almost like it goes without saying that we only always get part of the story. We never really get the whole. We never really get the whole story. So there's always something there that we kind of have to almost figure out on our own.
Ooh, okay. Appreciate it.
You know, like well, for instance, in the you know the Jamar Clark situation, that's a very unfortunate situation where, you know, the suppression of the witness, Mr. Copeland. I mean. There's never been any real reason why his input and why his eyewitness account has been suppressed.
Thank you. Right.
You know, it continues to swirl around. There was a person there, blah, 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 blah. But actually getting his eyewitness account and adding this to, you know, the situation is it just kind of dissipates for some reason, even though – as you say, the gentleman is here. He walks among us. He's here. He's involved. But yet, as an eyewitness, well, what was the great book, The Invisible Man?
Yes.
I mean, we're,
yes.
Right. Right.
We're here, but you know, we're for some reason not seen.
Right.
And then, as you know, the situation in North Dakota, you know how
yes,
now
sir.
It's like you know. The subversives, the any situation where it seems like there's, you know, someone that's subversive or a threat or dangerous, well, maybe they're aligned with someone, you know, back in the 50s it was the communists.
Yes,
you know,
it was,
and
sir.
So now maybe they're, you know, affiliated with, you know, some of the current.
Well, maybe, you know, they're the what's being implied, particularly by my associate, Mr. Allen, picking up on it, and the caller, who obviously is extremely knowledgeable and has boots on the ground, is that, you know, it's attempting to leave this message with us that you said it just seconds ago, M, that these Native Americans, these indigenous people whose property and land they're on are some way now just hooked up with ISIS and Al-Qaeda and, you know, maybe ISIS in the American Indian community. I'm a little nervous about a situation where an area is put under quarantine, and I think the caller indicated, and my understanding is the caller has extreme knowledge of aeronautics and et cetera. I mean, what is it that you're trying to stop the world from seeing? I mean, what are you getting ready to do up there? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we need other callers in, and maybe Mr. Allen and myself being a little biased, if you will, not fair. Maybe somebody representing the sheriff, either one of the three sheriffs in their departments, can indicate what is happening. But that I have to tell you, M, that is a stunner for me that the area has been put under aviation quarantine because that's really what it is.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
what is happening?
Well, it seems that you know that that's just you know a tactic. To allow, you know, to allow whoever powers it be, what have you, to, you know, to escalate their situation without really telling us the real reason that they're doing it. You know, I mean, these things go on, and there just always seems to be some type of ulterior type of thing that's going on that's over and above what they're actually telling you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know.
I agree.
Maybe
but
I'm
telling
just conspiracy.
Get your thinking on this. You're a former military individual, how do you read it? Are you still there with us?
Yes, I am here with you. Well, usually, you know, when you put a no-fly zone up, especially in something like that with the people who actually live in the area, and this is in the United States, that something is going to go down. And they don't want too many eyes on it so that their versions of the story will be the only versions of the story. So, I mean, I'm going to watch this.
Could I do it like
this
also with you, sir? Because I remember Pacific incident in modern times. I am a student of history, and I certainly remember what the Oklahoma National Guard and the federal government did to a black community in a place called Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in 1921 and 1922. But I'm more current, and I well remember the attack on a so-called white supremacist outside of Seattle in the bunker he was in, and the fact that they used barrel bombs. They keep talking, M and Mr. Allen, as if the barrel bombs are something that was created by the Russians and the Syrians. Hell, the first barrel bombs were dropped on row houses in Philadelphia and killed a significant number of African Americans, children and women. So, Mr. Allen, I mean, should we be kind of concerned that this is what they're setting up? Because I well remember how associates and friends in Philadelphia alerted me that that a quarantine had taken place because the FBI and them wanted to use the helicopters to scrape and to bomb those row houses where all those black people died. Gentlemen, do you both remember that?
Yes, I
read about it.
I certainly do. And, you know, I mean, this is a situation where citizens were under siege. Innocent citizens were bombed by our government on our soil.
Yes.
And I mean, so this is, I mean, this is
with significant casualties and damage.
Significant casualties.
It's like the government burnt down a whole two blocks of African-American occupied homes. And even in the case of the so-called supremacist, who actually called himself a naturalist, if you will, they couldn't get him out of that fortified position there just north of Seattle. And I'll never forget when they dropped the barrel bomb on him and just, you know, almost disintegrated. People were like, oh, my, we've never seen that before. Yet I'm well aware of the attack by Oklahoma Air National Guard on Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the Wall Street, the Black Wall Street of America, and blew up a lot of black folks, a lot of black churches. In fact, there are a couple books that shows one of the largest black churches in Tulsa at that particular time, on that particular day, on fire, engulfed in on fire, as those aircraft of that particular day were flying in, dropping bombs and et cetera. See, the only time that I've known that a entire community has been bombed by government forces in this country has been Tulsa and Philadelphia.
And what's frightening is that these, you know, these acts of, well, you know, really racism, these acts of aggression against people of color. I mean, I just saw something in the paper today, which was kind of unusual to see in a paper here in the north in Minnesota, about how they're desecrating, you know, the monuments to Emmett Till in the south in Mississippi.
How
they go by and shoot at it, and how they go by and desecrate, you know, that, you know, it's very sad. I mean, and these things, just their undercurrent of these things just continue to live with us. They just don't want to, they just don't want to go away for some reason. And it's very distressing. It's, I don't see the powers that be really mobilizing to a point where, to me, really, they really should. If they want to root that out, it's kind of like if you get this time of year you might get a mouse or something in your house, whatever. What you're going to do, you're going to bomb that thing to oblivion, get it out of here.
Yes.
You don't want that in your house. You don't want that. You're going to rid that from your residence. But I don't see the same type of zeal, you know, to rid these things, to rid our country, to rid our things of this hate that's rooted. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I see it.
I have to concur with you. I'm certainly not going to sit here and leave you out there on your own. And I know my colleague, Mr. Allen, is not. And I think there are many listeners that are not. But then there are also listeners, because we are watching very closely what is happening. By the way, let me say this, because I have been asked this by a couple sources, gentlemen outside, that we are still making inquiry on the strange circumstances surrounding the very strange death of a young African-American, well, Nigerian student at Winona State College in Winona, Minnesota. and it was Mr. Allen that broke the information last week that all of a sudden a TV station in, again, I'm pretty sure that was La Crosse, Wisconsin, broke the story that some white gentleman on his houseboat there on the Mississippi River had heard somebody, he thought it was a dog, and he went up, and it was a colored guy, and he told him, what are you doing on my boat? Get off my boat. But he turned around and went back down to go back to sleep, and then he said he heard a splash in the water, but he didn't get up to see what it was. And Mr. Allen and I had a discussion at our post meeting, and we both realized we've seen nothing in the media in this state that talking in terms of what the authorities are doing. Mr. Allen even said to me, he said, well, you know, will they tell us that he has a cut on his head, that he fell off the boat, hit the water, you know, drowned? I mean, there's nothing being said here about that young African-American. And by the way, there have been five other African-Americans who have mysteriously been killed over the last number of months. And by the way, gentlemen, there is a discussion going on that there is a racial serial killer in existence in the Twin Cities area, and there are six specific cases, three of them centering around Mall of America. In all cases, the individuals did not drive automobiles. They came out on the light rail and were found anywhere from 25 to 30 miles away from the Mall of America, dead, decomposed, and et cetera. In one case there, and I have to do this because I promised, there's a African-American woman who resides in an apartment building there, Mr. Allen, Mr. M., on the very edge of downtown, right there by the Hyatt Hotel. Her brother disappeared about 8 months ago. He was African-American man in his early 50s. He had gone to just kind of do some shopping, take in a movie at the Mall of America, disappeared. And just a couple weeks ago, after 8 months, they found his body underneath a bridge about 30 miles south of MOA. Now, this fits the modus operandi of two other African-Americans that were found. And then we still have a couple of African-Americans that disappeared and have not been found. And by the way, we take note of the young woman that no one is telling us about who was found in a drainage ditch just this morning in one of the southern enclaves, if you will. And by the way, gentlemen, let me just say this, and I've got the platform here. We've never really heard any real concern by the media of the black Minnesota Internal Revenue agent who mysteriously disappeared and was found, about 5 months later in a lake up there around White Bear. I mean, you know, black folks are turning up all over the place, man. And I guess in some regards, gentlemen, if it wasn't for a program like this, we wouldn't even be talking about it.
Well, you know, the carnage, these things go on. And also the, you know, actually the obvious kind of imbalance of the treatment of some of these things and crimes that go on. I mean, you know, I just read something, you know, it was in Sunday's paper, actually, in the Johannesburg, Star Tribune, where they talked about a young lady, a very sad young college student who had been raped by a very violent, maniacal student at the university. I don't know if you happened to read that Sunday.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how this student, that person continued, you know, the girl wasn't, the young lady wasn't believed, and he just continued to go to school, and his frat fraternity friends were kind of covering for him, and, you know, to the point of, you know, really causing some real emotional type stress on this poor young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't seem like, if not for the efforts of one particular, you know, law enforcement individual that really, you know, smelled something awry and really was determined to do something about it, for that to come to light. And it just, and I look at that and how serious that was and how, you know, heinous that crime was, and that, you know, they didn't really jump on that to root that person out of that environment. But at the same time,
if I could on that, you know,
But I just want to just say one thing, though.
Go ahead, go ahead.
At the same time, I look at five U of M players that have been, you know, banned from the team, alleged something happened because someone is in fear. Not that they did something, not that they actually did something of that nature, but because of the fear. So,
yes.
I mean, go ahead, Mr. Edwards. I certainly want to hear what you have to say.
No, I want to take that up, too, because, while I've had calls coming around from the country, around the country. I've had a couple folks have asked me about it. I was kind of taken back but not surprised, gentlemen, when this young lady was able to, with her female attorney, was able to go into court and just tell the judge that these were five bad Negroes. A couple of them, by the way, had never been under investigation, but I guess, you know, birds of a feather flock together mentality. And I'm just shocked at the University of Minnesota not contesting that restraining order. Now, I understood that yesterday they were supposed to go into court. Now it appears that they rescheduled a hearing, but certainly before Saturday's game, in which the attorneys, and by the way, they have black attorneys, I noticed, so that means somebody with passion, are insisting that the court reverse the restraining order and allow these young men to return. And Mr. Allen is the one that really said it to me yesterday, is that, I mean, they have been denied even the opportunity to go up to attend class. If they see the woman on the street, they've got to run the other way, and et cetera.
Yeah.
And I said, but the police wouldn't even investigate the case.
Yeah.
I just don't understand where the prima facie, as the Anglo-Saxon term is, where the prima facie was to do this. I don't know, Mr. Allen. What's your reflection? What's your thinking on this? What are you hearing on within the?
Well, this is the second time in under a year that a black person that attended the U or a group of black men's lives have been ruined by accusation by someone that is unfounded. Now, I'm going to say that rape is wrong. Rape is against the law.
Absolutely, and consent is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. But in this case, we have to find out these backstories, because I don't know if this is a white woman, a black woman, a Spanish woman, an Asian woman, or whoever, but someone's lying somewhere, because if they were not lying, these guys would be in jail right now. There will be a court case in them against them. There was no evidence whatsoever that said that these guys did a crime, but yet they are being treated like criminals. They cannot go to their dorm rooms. Yeah, they cannot play football, go to TCF Stadium, because this girl said, I feel scared and threatened.
Feel threatened.
Yeah.
She said threatened. She sounded just like law enforcement who shoot black people. I felt threatened. I saw him. He had a camera in his hand. I thought it was a gun. That's all I needed to think. But most importantly, I was threatened. I don't understand what is going on. I don't understand the thinking of the judge who accepted the legal argument to really strip these young men of their constitutional rights. But gentlemen, this is, and M, you have been there more recently than any of us, this is the way they used to treat kafirs in South Africa.
You had no rights whatsoever, man.
The term they use is a charge laid against you, right? and a charge could be laid against you, man, and they ain't nothing it even talks about. But we're not in South Africa. We're in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and yet these young black men have just been stripped of their dignity and everything else, man.
Well, you know, and again, I bring that point up to the contrast of these individuals in this fraternity, one of which had raped several young ladies violently.
Yeah.
Violently violated these and then individuals at the frat house participated in a cover-up to intimidate this girl so she wouldn't say anything and to trick her statements. And it just seems as though the university treats that as, oh, this is just fraternity boys. This is just, you know, fraternity boy. You know, this is there.
Oh, it's
you
like
know,
Donald
blah,
Trump.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's just some like a locker room activity.
You know, and they don't do anything. You know, they don't show the urgency on something like that. But nope. Then, you know, to ruin the lives of these young men, you know, who, for them to get to a point of playing football at a major university, they've, who knows what their lives have been before that and where they've come from to get there.
Let me say this about one of them. The young man from Detroit, his father is a police officer. And it was his father that started challenging the white media here in the Twin Cities about how they were covering it. They didn't realize when they called the father in Detroit that he was a law enforcement officer. And they tried to engage him in a bunch of frivolous conversation until they realized that he knew the law.
Awesome. Yeah. But again, the contrast, I mean, it's just on display daily. You know, and see, these things have a psychological, mental health effect on people. You know, see this.
Yes.
And you continue to see how you're treated and how people of color are continue to be treated differently like this. It has something that just kind of permeates the atmosphere that we live in.
Right.
And until we see something that counters that, you know, it's going to continue to be, you know, it continues to fester. And this is what we continue to kind of, you know, in our daily lives as we go ahead, you know, we try to deal with.
Yes. Mr. Allen, do we have anybody? We don't want to deny anybody. We've got about...
No, we don't. Not at all.
Got any callers? If not, we continue on. I also want to come back to the tragic shooting of a 66-year-old African-American grandmother in New York City that we broke on this station to the extent of really laying out what had happened. You see nothing really coming out of New York on that. Our leaders are so busy being involved in the presidential campaign. You know, gentlemen, we have missed a lot of stories in this country that have been suppressed and smothered by, quote-unquote, this presidential campaign. Man, you know, probably in January after the swearing in on the 20th, we're going to hear all kinds of media conversation about all kinds of things that have been happening in America, that particularly things involving us, that weren't relevant.
Exactly.
Well, I would like, you know, I know you're getting close to the end here. I would like to ask, if I could, your co-host, Mr. Allen, and you know, when he goes to the ballot box, is he still fervently in support of the Republican Party?
Mr.
I am voting. I am voting.
And I realize you don't have
whoever the GOP endorsed, I'll be voting for.
No, that's Mr. Trump. That's Mr. Trump. So there you have it, M. You heard it here live. Mr. Allen is staying the course for the big Donald. By the way, he opened a very swanky hotel in D.C. right down the street from the White House, as he pointed out, that he wanted to be close and take control of the most expensive properties on Pennsylvania Avenue. One is his hotel, and the other one is, of course, And by the way, we can get back to whoever wins. We can get back to saying with pride, as white America, the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been kind of tough these.
Well, I'm glad I got my response for that. I kind of suspected that would be the response, but it's very good to hear it go directly from the source to know that.
Absolutely. I've talked to him about it. He's told me
the course.
That, yes, he's told me that. That in fact, he expects to be on the Trump aircraft, the Trump jet plane,
be an actual surrogate. Maybe he could take up the Ben Carson role or the.
Let me ask this: if Trump wins, do you think that he will give Ben Carson a cabinet position, or do you think he'll have any colored people? Oops, in his cabinet.
I think he'll try. To give Ben Carson, because any cabinet position has to be authorized by Congress, right?
Have to advise and consent. Yes, it's called advise and consent. Yes. You're correct, Mr. Allen.
So, I mean, if they can get past that, you know, because if Trump wins, he's going to have the same problem Obama had with the Republicans trying to get stuff done. But, you know, Obama has been silent on a lot of things, including what we've been talking about, the pipeline. North Dakota. He hasn't let that slip out of his mouth at all. Hasn't said a word. So,
now, who else
anyway.
Do you think Mr. Trump would look at from the black community? Anybody else?
Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, Condoleezza. Yes. And has been a former national security advisor and all that. So that's absolutely correct. Yes.
Yeah, and Professor Gates for the Secretary of Education.
Okay.
And I heard that. I read that somewhere not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago. And then who else is there? We're running out of folks. Herman Cain's name came up, but they couldn't
Herman
flip
Cain,
from nine.
Formerly Pillsbury Corporation
I wonder what Ginger White would think about that. I wonder.
Yeah, well, you know, they couldn't. It's 999. They flipped over to 666. Unless they get them nine flipped back, they're not gonna mess with him. So, but anyway, that's really all I'm hearing, Mr. Edwards. And then, Professor Cornel West.
Yes, definitely Professor West, because he is a strong and very articulate critic of President Obama and
yes,
everything.
He would be.
Why are the Democrats not chastising Governor Mark Dayton for giving so much fodder and cannon fire, napalm, to the Republicans as it pertains to Minshew?
That's because Dayton don't want to admit that Minshew, Mr. Edwards, Minshew is so broken that when I volunteered over north to help 28 African Americans sign up for health care, and I'll hurry up because I have about 3 minutes, that when we went to lunch and they came back to continue the process, all their files were gone. All their data was erased. The website is broken. The whole input system is broken. Besides, they're charging more money. If you don't have the proper paper where you sit down, like your W-2 forms or your work, how much money you made, they're asking you, they're crawling up your butt asking you all kinds of questions. If you don't have that information, especially if you live in North Minneapolis where the unemployment rate is 55405 and 55411 are up around 40%, where people aren't working anyway, you know, there's no way that you can even try to apply or get a subsidy or get health insurance. And this is after a $193,000 grant to Alfred Babbitt and Johnson and Stair Step Foundation to figure that out.
Well, let me also do this, gentlemen. I'm giving formal notice that next week's program, I'm going to, with my colleague, I'm going to take a look and identify, I got to tell you, Don, the bogus numbers put out by Alex Tittle and others on the number of African Americans and others of color who worked on the stadium. Oops. There was a significant series of errors in a story in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. People need to be careful because sometimes you get fatigued and you start putting the wrong numbers down. But we have some documentation which shows absolute inconsistency going back to a report in January of 2015. It's rather startling and sad, but Mr. Allen and I were not invited to the October 6th party that the Vikings and the Sports Facility Authority put on. They fed the colored people down there so good, man, and had patted them on the back and talked about what a wonderful job they did admiring African-American people. October 6th, they had it down there. Them folks was living it up, man. Yes, they were. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Only thing is the hours that were published. The hours, Mr. Allen, and Mr. Allen initially said this way back on a cold January night, way back in 2011, that this was going to happen. And I got to tell you, it did. The numbers have clearly been, quote-unquote, shaved and boxed, if you know what I mean. So we're going to have some fun next week, gentlemen, because I'm going to bring out some documents that are 3 or 4 years old.
I look forward to it.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Mr. Allen, let them, whoever it is, take us on home, mate.
All right. See you next week.
All right.